I'd like to call a meeting to order, K-12 Finance Division. We do have a quorum?
Yeah.
Members, we do have a quorum. Do we have Deb here?
We do.
Not yet, okay. We do have a quorum, members. Would someone like to move the minutes for Wednesday the 28th? Representative Dominguez moves the minutes for Wednesday, February 28th. Any changes, comments on the minutes? All in favor of the minutes for February 28th, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Same sign. Minutes are approved. Okay. Representative Kelleher, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Chairman, thank you so much.
Welcome to our committee.
Well, thank you for having me. Thank you for entertaining the bill that I have before you.
You're welcome. I'll take the credit.
And you look good in the chair. What a nice thing.
It is a nice thing.
Mr. Reiling has you in the chair today.
I think, Madam Speaker, this is her way of getting me to stay here and not head home in the snowstorm.
I think that was probably a good thing that she's making you stay here.
Probably. Madam Chair, do you have someone to move your bill?
I do not, but I'd be happy to have someone.
Representative Hillstrom?
Mr. Chair, I will. I move that House File 319 be recommended to pass, and is it being laid over or is it being sent to the general
register?
To be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Representative Hillstrom. Madam Speaker, to your bill.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Representative Hillstrom, for moving the bill. I have not written anything lengthy for you today. I have a couple of testifiers with me, and our testifiers have changed a little bit with the weather. We had a number of people coming in from around the state, and of course they have been, I'm sure they were not easily detained by the weather, but they were, so I apologize about that. It was interesting this week. I looked at how many bills I'm the chief author of, and I'm the chief author of two bills, so this is one of them. And there's a reason for that. One of the things that I thought a little bit about after the election and becoming speaker-designate is an area that is very near and dear to my heart, and that is the public library system. Many of you know I grew up near Mankato, Minnesota, and I grew up with an old Carnegie Library. It's a beautiful building. It actually has now been turned into a wonderful art center in Mankato, and then a regional system actually was put together and a regional library was created. And growing up as a child, the last of six, some of my best friends, other than my dog, were the characters in books. Laura Ingalls Wilder, Betsy and Tacy and Tib from Mankato. And these were very important memories for me, but also very important to my learning. And as a mom, the library has been a very important place to my whole family. We go to the library a lot. We also own a ton of books ourselves. Some who visit our house are a little shocked by the number of books that we have, but we still go to the library. And I think that what's important about funding for the regional library systems and why carrying the regional library systems bill has been important to me is that all across the state, people love and cherish their libraries. And libraries are an important extension of learning. They are for those, as we get older, entertainment, to go check out the DVD or to get the latest book out. But for little kids, and a lot of kids, especially in those tween years, they're a place to go that's safe, that's fun, and that can really connect them with the outside world. Now you'll know just kind of how big of a geek I am, Mr. Chairman. When my daughter and I went to her hockey tournament in Red Wing recently, we had a period between games, you know, like 3 hours, and so we went to lunch with the team, and then the question was what to do next, and I asked her what we should do, and I offered shopping, and she said no. She's nine, and it was an antique mall in Red Wing. You all know it if you've been there. And she said, "Oh no, we can't do that." And so I said, "Well, let's go to the library." And she sort of said, "Okay, let's go to the library." So we went to the Red Wing Library on a Saturday afternoon, and I thought it was going to be really quiet. Actually, I sort of had expected maybe a couple of people You know, it's one of those probably built in the late 1950s, early 1960s, downtown Red Wing, low, flat, wonderful, little modern building. There must have been 75 people in that building. Every computer terminal was full. The magazine section, which is one of my favorites, I'm a magazine junkie, I love to read magazines, was absolutely full of people. So my daughter and I sat off in the children's section, and you know, I picked up a couple magazines, and she picked up a couple things, and we both sat there and read for an hour. And it was really wonderful. I went up to the library and afterwards, and I said, and I'm sure she probably still to this day is sort of wondering, why did that woman ask me that? Walked up and I said, are you part of a regional library system? And she said, well, yes, we are. I think, is it Southeast
Library?
Yeah. And that's all I asked her, and I walked away, and I'm sure she thought, why is she asking that? Well, that's because I knew I was carrying this bill. And I wanted to just tell you how used and loved that library was. On a Saturday afternoon in Red Wing, Minnesota, there were people all over that library. And I think that the testifiers will do an even better job, but my own personal feeling is that one of the ways that we help extend our learning and we actually help kids connect in different ways is by funding our regional library system, so that the out-of-school time, the summer, and those hours can be filled by the option of visiting a library and connecting both with others and the outside world. So,
all right. Thank you, Madam Speaker. And you want to give us your name and who you are for the tape, please?
My name is Chris Olson. I'm the Executive Director of the Metropolitan Library Service Agency, better known as MELSA, which is the regional public library system based here in the Twin Cities.
People are so happy to learn that. Here's a face behind MELSA
now. Yay! Certainly. We hope you're using those museum adventure pass programs if you're here in the Twin Cities. I'm sort of pinch-hitting today. Mark Branham, who's the director of the regional library system based in Worthington, couldn't make it, and so he sent me his testimony, but I've talked to you and talked to the legislature about funding for regional library systems before, and I want to thank the speaker for her fine support. And those Red Wing experiences can be very exciting because you can walk into libraries in Roseville or in Moorhead or in Worthington and see those same activities. So I come here today in support of House File 319, the bill which provides additional state support for regional public library systems and their services. During the past 15 years, the world of libraries have changed dramatically. Libraries continue in their role of providing a wide range of services, from early learning to school success to job search and business support, technology literacy, and community engagement. But what has really changed are the tools and the opportunities for sharing resources efficiently around the state. The legislature has supported tools such as the MinLink Gateway to provide access to all materials in libraries to all types of libraries across the state. However, the burden in the last 15 years of static funding for regional libraries, which has been providing the mechanisms for delivering these materials, has really fallen to local units of government. The investment of local dollars for these services reduces the ability of local libraries to improve collections or services and increase open hours for their citizens. The state investment of regional library systems is critical for continued citizen satisfaction and success in the 21st century world of information. In order to explain how systems work, I'm not going to direct your attention to the information in the library Strength in Minnesota packet that we handed out. Also note the handy tab that you can put these in your file and find libraries almost immediately.
Especially at markup.
The first sheet inside the folder talks a little bit about regional library basic system support. and really talks about what the system or the state provides now. $8.57 million has been appropriated at the same amount since 1992. This funding, in contrast to local dollars, is actually rather small. The funding for most public library systems really is from local property tax dollars. And one of the reasons why the state dollars are so important is that we can do those extra cooperative services and provide materials and share materials across the state. And you can see that in sort of that middle section, that the money really is used in a variety of ways throughout the entire system. Some libraries buy books and other items for their collections. Some systems pay for their automated card catalogs out of this kind of money. Interlibrary loan is something that's a very important and really the incentive behind the state dollars of being able to share materials and save money. So that if you know, my one example is I wanted a book called The Tall Woman, which was a popular book written by a woman in North Carolina in 1962, could not find a copy of it anywhere in the Metro Libraries, in the Melsa Libraries. Went into MinLink and found that the community college, or the technical college now in Thief River Falls, was almost the only library in the state of Minnesota that had that book. Hit that button from my desktop, and about 3 days later, it showed up at the Merriam Park Library here in St. Paul. That kind of very efficient use is really what we can do with those kinds of state dollars. What we're asking for is approximately a $5 million increase in this bill that would be, again, spread across the state, used in a variety of different ways to support local library services. To go back and to look at that second page of reciprocal borrowing and delivery, that story that I just told you really is the basis for that we've seen a huge increase of sharing of materials because of that MinLink system, that the public really has discovered that service. And frankly, in some ways it has just overwhelmed us, not only in staffing but in physical delivering of those materials. So we hope that you are willing to support that. So in summary, for this part of my presentation, we look to the legislature to support the cooperative efforts on behalf of all Minnesota citizens who love and support the critical work of their local libraries with this increased funding. Thank you. If there's any questions, I'd be willing to ask them.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Are there any questions for Mr. Olson at this point? Okay, seeing none. Ms. Keith?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, I'm Elaine Keith with the Minnesota Library Association, and I hadn't actually planned to testify today, but as you might imagine, because of the weather, I had to step in and pinch hit. In this case, just pretend that I am actually Ann Hokinson, who is the director of the Austin Public Library. And she wasn't able to make it, but due to the wonders of email, she sent me her testimony, and so I'm going to present that. Maurer County residents need you to pass the $5 million annual increase in funding for regional library basic system support. The Maurer County Commissioners and the library boards of Maurer County Libraries have endorsed this legislation. We depend on a healthy regional library system to get our residents the information that they need. Austin Public Library is the largest library in Maurer County. There are three other smaller public libraries as well. We are all members of SELCO, which, as you've heard, is the regional library system in the southeastern part of the state. And we all share our resources through interlibrary loan. Interlibrary loan is the most cost-effective way to get Minnesotans all of the information that they need. In Austin, we routinely borrow research materials from around the world for the scientists at the Hormel Institute, unusual theological and historical texts for a published author to use, small appliance repair information for a business owner, and, of course, materials for our local school children. Increases in telecommuting distance learning, homeschooling, and professionals choosing rural towns as their homes have all dramatically increased the variety of materials that local libraries need to supply to their users. All of our computers and their complex systems are maintained by Selco, which allows my library staff to focus on the work that we do locally, answering reference questions, selecting and purchasing new materials, and managing the day-to-day operations of the library. Selco and other regional library systems are the backbone of support that allows public libraries to function well and allows our residents access to the world of information that they need. Static funding since 1992 has meant that regional library services have been cut and that those costs have been passed on to local public libraries. The Austin Public Library is saddled with costs that Selco, our regional library system, used to cover. Austin's library budget has been steadily increasing to absorb these costs, but the public does not see any added services or materials for this money. The city of Austin is already struggling with adapting to the new budget reality from LGA cuts and cannot continue to take on these additional costs. Something has got to give, and it will mean fewer hours open or fewer books or fewer computers for the public and no end in sight to future cuts as the regional library systems lose budgetary ground to inflation. The regional library system is a good idea. It works. It brings every resident of Minnesota the world of information. It works for Maurer County. Please fully fund it so that it can continue to work and so that our libraries can continue to serve Minnesotans. And that was her testimony that she had planned to give. I also want to call to your attention this handout, which is in your packet. Actually, this came about because Representative Murphy had called me a couple of months ago and said, I know that Minneapolis and some other libraries are really struggling and there's been a lot of media attention, but I also know that libraries in my area and that in other parts of the state are struggling as well. And can you, you know, collect the information about the cuts that have taken place in libraries across the state and compile it? And so this is the result of that. And you can look through it and see that we've had branches closed, we've had staff reductions, we've had cuts in hours open in libraries in the last few years, cuts in materials budgets. It's just been very, very painful. And so we would really appreciate whatever you can do to help us by advancing this legislation. There are actually two appropriations in this bill. The one that we've been talking about is a $5 million per year increase for regional library basic system support. The second appropriation is a smaller one. That's an increase for the multi-county, multi-type library systems. Their mission is to foster cooperation between all kinds of libraries, school libraries, public libraries, higher ed libraries, government libraries, and so forth. And their funding has been flat since 1997. And so I'd like to turn the microphone over to Patricia Post, who's going to speak to that. And she actually, I think, deserves credit for having braved the weather and come in from St. Cloud.
Yay.
And it took like almost 3 hours, I think, and
wow,
probably take longer to get home. So anyway, here's Patricia.
Thank you. Welcome, Ms. Post, to the committee.
Thank you. What will make this quite interesting is I will...
Ms. Post, would you please state your name and title for the record?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Patricia Post, Director of the Central Minnesota Libraries Exchange, also known as CMLE, the Central Minnesota Multi-County, Multi-Type Library System.
Thank you.
Having said that, before your eyes, I will be three people today. I will be myself. I was going to bring a school media specialist with me and one of our high school students, but when school closed, they stayed home. So.
Understandable.
So I don't think I'll do voices. I'll start with my testimony.
It doesn't matter.
That would be a great, that would be very entertaining, actually.
As I said to Elaine, when I do the student, should I be more flippant or?
Not sure. Just roll your eyes.
Yeah.
Being a mom of.
Yes. Okay. So the seven multi-county, multi-type library systems, referred to as multi-types, strengthen Minnesota by providing support services to librarians and by facilitating the cooperation between all types of libraries. And that means academic, public, the K-12 school media centers, and special libraries, including those special libraries in hospitals, historical societies, law libraries, and prisons, to name a few. The seven regional multi-types serve 1,915 Minnesota libraries of all types. And 66% of those member libraries are school media centers.
Services vary by region, but basic core services are evident in each multi-type system. In all cases, our member libraries need to meet a set of guidelines to become a member. Resource sharing is a big part of membership in a multi-type system. So we all have staff who act as consultants and or facilitators to assist in grant writing, planning, or in solving various library-related problems. Multi-types make things happen in a variety of ways. We make sure that library materials and expertise are shared amongst our member libraries and across regions. We specialize in building the capacity of our librarians through both one-on-one coaching and also with professional development activities. We accept our role as support organizations, and we strive to make our member libraries stronger. One important way we support our member libraries is through effective communication systems that utilize things like web pages, emails, webinars, podcasts, newsletters, and telephones. And a laundry list of other services exist, but there will not be time to list those out today. So examples provide a practical way to see how libraries work together. Well, this is where it gets dicey. Next, you will hear the school media specialist from Holdingford Schools and one of their high school students. This example will illustrate the efficiency of our interlibrary loan service in the central Minnesota region. It demonstrates what happens when a multi-type, my multi-type, located at and drawing from the resources of a state university, responds easily to requests of its member libraries for loans of materials. Debbie Disher will talk about the needs of the Holdingford K-12 schools and how the cooperation of this multi-type, the academic library and the public libraries, have helped fill those needs. Although local academic libraries are all willing to share their materials, an entity like CMLE is needed to provide the linkages to mediate these requests. So filling these requests for college materials is within the mission of the multi-type. In this case, the college, St. Cloud State, provides the library materials, technology support, and I get student workers from St. Cloud State to augment my staff and my very minimal budget, and we fill over 7,000 requests each year to the schools and some of our other members too, like the St. Cloud Hospital. The public library assists in delivering these requested materials to libraries in close proximity to the schools. So this is a fantastically efficient use of CMLE's $120,000 yearly grant and a wonderful collaboration among libraries. Multi-types make things happen by identifying these types of efficiencies across all member libraries and promoting ways to take advantage of these efficiencies whenever it's possible. We promote cost sharing when it makes sense, but after 10 years of flat funding, we have nearly exhausted our bag of tricks for squeezing a nickel. With our flat budgets, which in truth are declining budgets when we factor in inflation, we are at a breaking point. We have already cut services, but in some cases we will need to shut down core services like the interlibrary loan service I just described if we cannot at least get cost of living increases. So I would like to thank you for any help you can offer with our funding situation and for your support of libraries. And now I will be Debbie Disher. I will read it as she wrote it. Debbie would have said, I am the K-12 media specialist for Holdingford Public Schools, which serves approximately 1,000 students in central Minnesota. Unfortunately, we have been in statutory operating debt for some time, so our media centers have suffered. Our high school media center has been very neglected, and with budgets being tight and stretched in so many directions, it seems there's never enough money. Our media center staff has taken advantage of many of the low-cost professional workshops available through CMLE, Central Minnesota Library Exchange, as well as the interlibrary loan opportunities. Although book prices have dramatically increased, my book budget has stayed the same, and at times it's decreased. It is not uncommon to see reference books costing between $60 and $100 each. A large portion of our collection is over 20 years old, having been published before 1985. So our students, as well as staff, have become very dependent on Central Minnesota Libraries Exchange to support our curriculum with more current materials. Last year, we borrowed 270 titles through Central Minnesota Libraries Exchange. And this year, thanks to CMLE and their cooperation with Great River Regional Public Library, we participate in the Red Bag program, where any materials that we borrow are now delivered to the Upsala branch of the Great River Regional Library. A lot of these areas don't have their own public library, so they have to go to the next town. I then pick them up and deliver them to our school, which saves in transportation costs to our district. It is cost-effective for taxpayers to support the multi-type library so they can provide schools with these titles that might only be used once a year and therefore be shared with many school districts. Our elementary teachers discover book titles from journal articles they read. If we don't have a particular title in our collection, we find ourselves borrowing from CMLE. Our high school students occasionally use these resources for their personal reading, but the vast majority are students who are doing research for their classes. We are all working hard to increase the rigor in our classrooms, and this puts more demands on our media centers and the materials that are needed. Borrowing materials from other libraries helps meet these requirements. One student who uses CMLE's services is Bethany Berg, who is an honors student taking some college-level classes. Bethany would like to share how she is using CMLE to help her with her studies. So, Bethany Berg would have said, "I have used the books in my library frequently for research and school-related activities. Sometimes if I cannot find the book I am looking for, I tend to get stressed out about where I will find it. If I'm looking for a book on a recent topic, sometimes I cannot find it because our school just does not have the funds to continually purchase new books. I attend Holdingford Public High School, which is one of the smaller schools in Minnesota, and since our school is on the smaller side, it is hard for every resource to be available at all times to the students. Also, for being located in a smaller community, the school library is our main source for our research. The Central Minnesota Libraries Exchange offers a lot of help to someone in need of that certain book. I was introduced to CMLE services when I first came into high school, but have not gotten the maximum use out of the program until now, my senior year. The interlibrary loan program is a great thing to have, especially for students like me who are in college-level classes. I am currently enrolled in two college-level classes in high school, college literature and college macroeconomics. Last semester, I was assigned the task of completing an 8-to-10-page persuasive essay on an issue dealing with civil liberties or civil rights in my college government class. I chose to write an essay about flag desecration and its questionable legality. As I was searching for books in my library, I found a couple of books dealing with the topic, but few were to my liking. I searched the topic through the CMLE program and found many books I thought would help me in completing my essay. So I ordered them and found them. They helped immensely. I have used this service for other projects too, but this one was very important to me because it is a college-level class. If not for the interlibrary loan program through CMLE, I would not have found the books that I needed. Hopefully, this program will continue to be available to the entire student body, especially the honors students."
Okay, thank you, Ms. Post. That was very well done in terms of... I guess one comment I would make, I would assume lots of talk about books and the need for books in the libraries, but I would assume technology and the people for the technology would be a great need also. Is that a fair comment?
Mr. Chair, if I could just say that I think that there was a question, posed maybe 15 years ago, is the library going to die because of paperless society, Representative Garofalo? I just couldn't resist. No, I don't get to speak when I'm speaking.
That was well-timed, speaker.
And also because of the rise of things like, you know, easy access to people being able to order their own books. My husband recently learned what a one-click account is on Amazon, which I have, which he never had used before, but he bought something because he clicked.
Did you care to share that with us?
The Tournament. It's a hockey DVD produced in Canada about crazy hockey tournament parents. So there you go. It's very fun. You know, there's a hockey theme and a library theme going here. Also things like, you know, just the access to bookstores. You know, 50 years ago, there wasn't a bookstore on every corner. In a lot of places, there are now. And so the question was, are libraries obsolete? And because of technology and the need for use of technology as well, like I described to you, that day that I went to the Red Wing Library with my daughter, basically to burn some time, every computer terminal was full, and each was full with a different sort of person. Older people, younger folks. I mean, it was really interesting to look at that. And if you visit a lot of libraries, you will see today that one of the pressing needs is actually this technology piece to be able to have access to technology. The technology both helps librarians do their job in what you heard about, but it also is an absolute need for the public. And I just want to say, I mean, isn't it amazing how creative and efficient they are? When you hear these stories about people driving books from town to town, when you hear about students who can't get what they need in their own school library, what they're doing to get the resources that we need. I mean, textbooks are an issue in this committee, is my guess. And the access to having sort of common access to the ability to do your homework by being able to get the textbook you need on even a reference basis would be very important in this situation. And I don't think, you know, this is one of these situations, 1991, folks. 1991 is the last time they have seen an increase. 1997 for the multi-type, multi-county. They're doing a lot with a lot less, and they're probably doing a lot more with a lot less, and I don't think we can keep asking them to do it without getting to that breaking point.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I have to put in a little plug here. I serve on the Rochester Area Library Foundation, and by reference, or by osmosis, I guess, I'm not on the library board, but a lot of the same people, and it's really fascinating to be involved and get a look at the inside, so to speak, and it's tremendous what they are doing, and I've been very resourceful. Questions. Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to ask Speaker Kelleher or maybe her testifiers this little statement first. Looking at this list of reductions, my wife keeps telling me, you know, I work all week, and when it's time for me to be able to go to the library, it's closed. So my question really is, will these resources that we have in this House File 319, how far will it move us back to where we were in 2003? And I just want to mention that, you know, I've only been here for a few weeks, but every committee I'm on, it seems that our objective is to try to recover the losses that the state suffered in its quality of life in 2003. And I'd just like to know, how far will this recoup these losses?
Ms. Keith? Madam Speaker?
I think it's difficult to say that absolutely that something like a 33% in the Carlson Library or a 8 hours a week in Fergus Falls can be restored with $5 million spread statewide. I'm not sure that that would be a realistic goal of the committee even, but what it will do is, since there hasn't been increased funding since 1991, would it help? Absolutely. I think that, you know, Representative Marquardt, if that had to go present a bill as my guess or had to run off to another committee, you know, his property tax committee, Representative Lincheski's committee working on some of the other issues of property tax relief, I think will also be important in this issue of making sure that Minnesotans have access to the things that make their communities, making living in a community somewhat equal, that you can live in Carlson, Minnesota and go to the library and have police and fire protection, that you can live in Fergus Falls and expect a similar thing, that you can be part of the Anoka County system and expect that, and that you can be part of Hennepin County and expect that. I think that's what we're going for here, and I think it's important to realize that you know, we can keep pressuring people to keep doing more and more and more, but at some point tough choices get made then. And already many, many communities have made those very, very dramatic and tough choices. And you're absolutely right, Representative Benson. I just have to tell you, you know, there's been a number of times when my kids and I have driven to the library only to find the library closed that we have driven to. And that didn't make this citizen very happy, and it certainly made me a bit embarrassed to know that we can do something about that and not have done it.
Thank you. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I would like to comment a little bit because I didn't get the opportunity on Monday. Monday was Library Day in the Education and Economic Competitiveness Committee. And the librarians that are here today were here on Monday, and there were about 20 more. And the Washington County Library Board also was here to participate in the committee meeting and also to have their committee meeting here at the Capitol when we were completed. But things don't always work out as planned, and so we didn't have Library Day. And we can't cancel Library Days across the state for very many years. Speaker Kelleher talked about Carlton, and that's the most inspiring story that I would like to share with you. I used to represent Carlton before the last redistricting, and in that same time period, the city of Carlton, small town, was faced with, shall we close the library? And they had a referendum. And in their referendum, the citizens were told, you know, they will have to increase their property taxes for $9,000 more if they were going to keep the library open. And there is a library in Cloquet. They used it their library was open only several hours a week, not necessarily with a librarian, but it was a community library. It was the center. It's in the city hall. And I thought, oh my gosh, the people get to vote whether to keep the library open. I wonder what's going to happen. They voted yes. And this was not an easy vote for any of them. And the library is open. But you can see from here, their budget is not so very great. But they scrape by. And libraries across the state are doing that. The bookmobile in the Arrowhead region has stops, and people are lined up. Their little cars are lined up at the stop. And they wonder, oh, is it going to come? Did it break down? What happened? But lo and behold, here comes a bookmobile, and here comes the families into that bookmobile. And for the hour or the 40 minutes that they're there, they are participating, and it is a wonderful experience, an experience that they expect. The senior citizen that can't get out, that's housebound, gets their books by mail. And they get three books, and within 3 days, they've returned the three books and are waiting for their next list. These kind of things have to be able to continue. And with a 15-year stagnant budget, we have to do better. And I just think we didn't have Library Day, but in the future, the citizens across the state, whether they're tiny babies at the cradle read-a-thon at the local library, or whether they're the senior citizen, or whether they're the person that's doing a new resume, or the person, it's part of the lifelong learning thing. It's part of the continued education throughout your lifetime. And we have to be able to continue it. And it can't be continuing just on bottom line dollars. We have to have improvement. And this next Monday, we are going to start in the committee, the umbrella committee for education. We are going to start our prioritizing and the process to set the targets. And I am hopeful that the people that are on this committee, that are on that committee, will have libraries in their top three requests. Maybe that'll already be filled in. I'm not quite sure yet. But we have to go forth, not stay status quo or go backwards. And I have to go to my other committee.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Murphy.
I think a heads up to any member of this body, if it's me or anyone else, never schedule the rules debate on Library Day.
Thank you, Chair Murphy. It sounds like you're going to be firmly flexible.
Indeed.
Thank you. Just as a general comment, I know there's another bill floating out there that has to do with possibly studying how we do regional libraries in the state of Minnesota. I think there's a study. And I think it would be very interesting. Libraries are part of our fabric. And as they evolve and as they change, an educated society is a healthy, strong, vibrant, and ongoing society, and I think it's a very important part of it. And personally, I think this kind of thing is really good. We need to study it. Just a quick comment on Representative Benson. This has been a 15-year issue, bipartisan. There's been changes. So I think it's something that we're looking at now, and I like the idea of looking at, I signed on the bill, I think, to look at the total reorganization, and I'm excited about that coming forward as we look at making these healthy. So any further comments, Madam Speaker?
Well, I just thank you and the committee for all of their time in listening to this issue. You have indulged us a great deal of time to listen to the plight of regional libraries and multi-library systems, and I hope that, I'm glad that Representative Reiling didn't ask about the target today, but I understand that I will have something to do with this in terms of how much Representative Murphy and Representative Reiling and myself and others, Representative Solberg, work together to make sure that you have some resources to do what you need to do in your committee as well.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Representative Erickson, did you have a quick comment? Did you have a quick comment?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to note that the qualifier in front of increase is the word substantial, because the House has always recommended some kind of increase, at least while I've served here. In fact, I've carried the bill. It's the Senate who has balked at increases for libraries, so I do want to know the House stands on record as having offered increases. Whether I carried the bill or Commissioner Seekman carried the bill, the House has been supportive of increases for libraries. It has not been substantial, but it has been an increase. And I wonder if we shouldn't hear from the state librarian who's here to talk about what the governor has in mind for the study. I believe that's in his proposal. Ms. Larson?
Welcome. We would welcome some quick comments. We are looking at three more bills to do, so we can introduce yourself, please, and give some testimony.
My name is Suzanne Miller. I'm a state librarian and work for the Department of Education for the Division of State Library Services, and I'm happy to speak to you today. Briefly, we have proposed that we do a study of the structure of how library services are delivered in the state of Minnesota. The idea is to determine what our priorities are, but how do we deliver them today, and can we do a better and more efficient job of delivering them, and how do we need to restructure the way we're collaborating in order to maximize our efficiency. And really, that's the idea, is that what you heard about different ways that services have been delivered, and we already collaborate and cooperate and integrate all these different types of libraries. We want to make sure that we streamline that as much as possible. And that's basically the idea of the structure study. Let's try to make it as efficient and cost-effective as possible.
And Mr. Chair, if you could just say, Representative Erickson, I think the one thing that strikes me that I think you should all think about, and I hope you'll do this as the, as I don't know if you direct the study, if that is funded and goes forward, is that one of the great things about this system is it seems like it's one of the ultimate democracies of our state. These groups have assembled because of geography, because of sharing of resources. And so when I hear you say that, I worry just a bit about templating a system when actually our system has just this organic democratic feeling about it, about the areas that work together. And I don't know enough to say, but I want to say that what strikes me that works so well about this is that people have self-organized into these groupings and they have worked very efficiently together. So please don't lose that as you move forward.
Well said, Madam Speaker, and I agree with that personally. Representative Gradley, Madam Chair.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Demmer is kind enough to start the committee since I had a bill up in another committee. He's going to do the first two bills and I'll do the second two bills. But I just wanted to ask one quick question. Representative Kelleher, did you introduce any other bills yet?
In terms of what I'm carrying, I have two bills, Madam Chair, and the other that I have is actually the newborn hearing screening bill, which is near and dear to my heart as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Madam Speaker, I was thinking you only had this very important bill, but now you've got two. But I think with powerful people like Representative Murphy and Speaker Kelleher promoting this bill, it's apt to see some success this year after quite a drought, and we better make sure the Senate cooperates.
We'll work on it.
Okay.
Thank you,
Madam Speaker. With that, Representative Hillstrom renews her motion that House File 319 be laid over for possible inclusion. Very quickly, is there anybody else who would like to testify? Okay, with that, renews the motion, and House File 319 will be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Morrow. Welcome to the committee. Representative Morrow, you're a member of the committee, I believe. You can move your bill and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House File 409 for possible inclusion in the K-12 finance bill.
Representative Morrow moves that House File 409 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus K-12 finance bill. Proceed with your bill.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. There are basically two components to this bill, as you can see, and then we'll get a good deal of explanation about the two components. But essentially, this bill is important to me as a instructor and as a parent. This bill deals with telecommunication, internet connectivity, both for regional libraries, serves all the regional library systems in Minnesota, and for K-12 public school and private school connectivity. And we've seen a number of presentations in the past couple of weeks involving technology, involving teaching methods, involving the interactive smart board that we saw in the last session, in the last meeting. All of these rely upon the building's ability to connect with the outside world and the internet. And this bill attempts to ensure that our public libraries and our public and private schools can do that. And with that, I'll turn to Chris Olson of the Metropolitan Library System Association.
Yes, my name is Chris Olson. I'm the director of MELSA.
And, welcome back, Mr. Olson.
Once again, pinch hitting for Peg Werner, who is the director of the Viking Library System based in Fergus Falls, who could not be here today. And through that wonder of email, I can read her testimony. I also like to point out, back in your good library folder with the tab, there is a sheet about telecommunications for regional public library systems and schools in this folder in your handout. Public libraries have many new and exciting ways of serving the public. Resource sharing through online catalogs, such as MinLink, which is the gateway of all library materials in Minnesota. And in addition, ELM, the Electronic Library for Minnesota, which is a collection of online newspapers and magazines. All of these services are transmitted over a high-speed telecommunications network called the Learning Network of Minnesota. Minnesota has had a single telecommunications network since 1995 that is shared by K-12 schools, public libraries, and public colleges and universities. It is a private network which allows data transferred over the network to remain private. Because of the statewide backbone, infrastructure, and many individual lines are shared, the network provides great cost efficiencies for the taxpayer. Public libraries use the network to provide services to the public. People use it to search library catalogs, both in the library and from remote sites, to access the MnLink gateway and the Elm databases, for internet access from library computers, and for reference support for online students and to support the traditional curriculum. 55% of the funding for public library and K-12 school portions of the network come from the federal government in the form of E-rate reductions, and 45% comes from the state of Minnesota. The public library portion of the network has operated for 10 years on $1.2 million of state money per year. However, automated library systems have changed greatly in the past few years, offering many improvements but requiring much more bandwidth. In addition, all of you personally know how much the internet has changed in the last 10 years. From text only, to pictures, to sound, to music, to motion, and now onto streaming audio and video, which all require more and more bandwidth. House File 409 seeks to increase regional library telecommunication aid, or LTA, by $1.1 million per year for a total of a $2.3 million annual appropriation. This increase will allow all public libraries to have the access needed to support library users' telecommunication requirements. The importance of this shared network to public libraries and K-12 schools cannot be overstated. Literally, all of the online services that take place on this network and the sharing of this network has meant a great cost savings to the people of Minnesota, but funding to keep it in place and its adequate size is crucial. Libraries and schools contribute to the service by providing for internal wiring, computer hardware, technical support, and software applications. Together, the state, the libraries, and the schools have collaborated to form a strong and essential network. Putting on a school hat, unlike public libraries, school funding of telecom lines from the legislature has not been continuous. TARP was funded in 2000 and 2001. In 2002 and 2003, it was partially funded. And in 2004-05, it did not receive any funding at all. Most recently, in 2006 and 2007, school telecom funding has made a comeback at $3.75 million. In 2006, the schools will receive 70% reduction of costs after their E-rate reimbursement. And in 2007, they'll receive 60%. The decline is partially because schools need more bandwidth also and because more schools are gearing back up after the cuts in 04 and 05. This request in House File 409 is for an additional $5 million per year for a total of $8.75 million annually. This will allow schools to be more, although perhaps not completely, fully funded after E-rate. Because of the totals that are recorded each year, it will be more clear at the end of June of 2008 how close this amount will come to full funding. If you have any questions, I'd be willing to answer.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Representative Foles.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I would have more of a comment than a question. Several of the schools in my area are part of a cooperative, telecommunications cooperative, and one of their employees, the guy that runs that for them, Steve Hallen, who was actually in Hinkley last night when we were there, was supposed to come down today and testify, but because of the weather, he wasn't able to make it. Through the miracle of technology, I did not get a copy of his transcript, so I'm going to make it up as I go home.
Would that be telepathic, Representative Paul?
Yeah, that's even more old-fashioned than the old-fashioned way. So, But I do know that this is extremely important to schools in outstate Minnesota. As we try to broaden the class offerings to our students in some of the more rural, greater Minnesota areas, the only economical way we can do that is through some of these telecommunications and internet. And I know that a lot of the schools in my district are using that. And what it allows them to do is to offer French, for example, where there's maybe only one or two students in the whole school that want to take French, and they go online and they take it. The teacher might be in Colorado, or I don't even know where, maybe Paris, for all I know. But it allows a teacher to teach the 20 students that might be in 20 different schools all at the same time. And so it's an extremely important thing for us to make sure that our students in greater Minnesota have access to the class offerings that we think are important in the future. So this is a very important thing, and as technology continues to advance and develop, we have to keep up with it. It becomes obsolete so quick that it does take a significant investment and an ongoing investment. So I hope that we take and look at this very long and hard. I also wanted to comment to Representative Mara, what a flashy tie you've got there. I didn't know you were such a flashy guy, but yeah. Thank you.
Representative Harrison.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to reinforce what Representative Fell said, because in his school district of Braham, the French teacher transmits to War Road her French classes, and that allows Brian to have a full-time teacher in that language, because over interactive they transmit that far. I mean, War Road, that's almost Canada, and Brian is in central Minnesota. So, that shows just what can happen. Representative Faust said maybe the teacher's in Colorado, but in this case, she's right in his district.
Very good. Thank you. Seeing no further questions, anybody in the audience wish to say anything about the bill, testify? Seeing none, Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just follow up on Representative Faust. I have no comment about your title, Representative Faust, but I would like to say that I, too, received emails from regional directors who were unable to join us here today to testify, again, in support. And I would say to members of this committee, if we're going to pursue online learning, if we're going to pursue assessment, especially assessment that gives almost instantaneous responses to our teachers, if we're going to close the achievement gap, if we're going to pursue science, technology, engineering, and mathematics education in conjunction with partners like the Science Museum sending programming throughout the state, if we're going to have an informed citizenry, and if we want to, in the long run, have some cost savings on buying books online and having journals online, I too will join Speaker Kelleher in commending Representative Garofalo on the effort to save paper, if you will. For all these reasons more, I do think that we need to have the bandwidth in our libraries and schools to do the job. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Morrow. House file.
I renew my motion to lay it over for inclusion.
Thank you. House file 409 will be laid over for possible inclusion in a K-12 omnibus bill.
Thank you.
Representative Lilly, if you could come down. But while he's coming down, I want to thank Representative Demmer for pinch hitting. We went for our vice chair, but he was off presenting a bill along with myself. And then we thought the lead Republican, but he wasn't here. So Representative Demmer was the vice chair of K-12 finance last year. So, of course, he did a wonderful job.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You weren't here right when I started. I thought maybe you put me here because you wanted to keep me from going home in the snowstorm. That's what that really is.
Well, Representative Demmer, we do need a quorum. You know. And then also, I want to thank the members and especially Representative Faust for the trip, the wonderful trip that we had last night to Hinckley. And you may notice that there's a letter in your packet, and I'm going to call on Representative Faust if you want to make any comments about your trip or tell us about the letter and who it's from.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I would like to say once again thanks to everybody that came along last night and to the people that really did the work in setting it up. It really wasn't myself. And I would like to point out the letter that we have here from St. Clair River Education District. First one on the bottom, Kim Gibbons, once again, she is the person that is Sandy Wolfschlager's niece. And the second page is a chart that was accidentally skipped in the handout that we got, and so they blew that up for us. And he important thing to look at here is that if you watch the trend line as to the percentage of students receiving services as a specific learning disability, and you see what the spread the schools involved with the St. Clair River Education District, how much lower that is than the state average. And that's a significant thing, and that saves those districts a lot of money, and that's why it's such a good program. Thank you
very much, Representative Faust. It was a very, very impressive for those who, the few that weren't there. I know that other people had a lot of things to do. But to have all that research based on every single student and then to see those kind of charts and results was phenomenal. I used to be an elementary teacher myself. My master's degree is in reading instruction, and yet I was completely blown away because we didn't do things like that back in my day, I can tell you that. Representative Lilly, welcome to the committee. I will move House File 112 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And if you could please tell us about your bill and introduce your witness. Welcome.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. We're going to follow up the ice arenas with after the libraries. Interesting story I just kind of want to throw in about my community. And I always like to say we have a old town Main Street, and it started in the 1880s, and one of the first things that was begun in our communities was a row full of bars on Main Street, and then the ladies of the community, to the showing great wisdom, as they often do, in our community started a reading room at the same time, 1880s. So it's just kind of an interesting piece of trivia about our community. So we also have a library that's opening up next in the next couple of weeks in Maplewood, so hopefully you can make it out for that. Well, Madam Chair, House File 112 is in regards to ICE Arena Levy Authority and working with that. Today I have Dennis Sullivan with me, and he's our business director, and as he'll mention, this doesn't really yield a ton of money for our district, but we're in one of those districts that is really going through it. And appreciate the opportunity to come before you and want to mention that. Last couple of years, he just mentioned to me that we've had to cut $15 million. We have a levy that just went down. We're just, but we're counting every penny, and that's what this bill is about. So I have Dennis Sullivan with me here, and maybe he can offer real facts of the bill. So thank you.
Welcome, Mr. Sullivan, and if you could restate your name for the tape and then proceed.
I will. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dennis Sullivan. I'm the Director of Business Services at North St. Paul Maplewood Oakdale School District, District 622. I'm here to testify, as Leon mentioned, House File 112. This affects those school districts in Minnesota that have own their own ice arena. There are currently only 10 districts in the state that own an ice arena. Those districts are Bemidji, Rosemont, Apple Valley, Eagan, Red Wing, Wayzata, International Falls, North St. Paul, Maplewood, Oakdale, White Bear Lake, Roseau, Ely, and Hermantown. Those 10 districts under current law have the ability to levy for 90% of the net operating costs of our arena on an annual basis, meaning that after we've calculated all of the revenues that we generate and the overall expenditures, the difference between those, if there is a net expense, we are allowed to levy 90%. Prior to 2003 and the large budget reduction that was done at the state level, we were allowed to levy 100% of that amount. And as part of the reduction, that was back down to 90%, as was the regular lease levy that all districts have available to them. In 2005, the lease levy was restored to 100%, but the ICE arena levy was not. And I'm assuming it was probably an oversight because there's such a small number of districts that currently have an ICE arena. The total cost for pay 2007, the total levy for those 10 districts is $900,000, and the 10%, according to MDE statistics, is about $100,000. In our district, our net levy is only $6,647 for pay 07. So this is really only $664 for my district. So as Leon said, it's not a big amount of money, but we've cut $15 million in our district. Now that's 15% of our total budget, and we have no end in sight. And so I'm trying to find every penny that I can. This $664 comes out of our general fund, and of course the amount varies from year to year. We have two ice arenas in our district. And so I'm simply requesting or hoping that this committee and the House would consider restoring that 10% back so we would be able to levy again as we were prior to 2003, 100% of our net operating costs for our arena. And so that's my testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Sullivan. And we have one question so far, two questions so far. Representative Olson and then Representative Faust.
Actually, Madam Chair, I was going to comment at the beginning here. I wasn't sure if Representative Lilly had heard all of the testimony on the library bills to understand the strong connection between those and this bill. As Representative, as Speaker Kelleher noted, her experience in going to the library and getting a good hockey tape.
Representative Olson, I wish I would have called on you sooner. That was timely now, too, though. Representative Lilly?
Really, no comment. I was kind of... you can't really help, but I was sitting back there listening, and I kind of leaned over and told somebody we should get a letter from, because they had other people had letters, and I said, we should get a letter from Herb Brooks or something. But, anyways, sorry.
Yeah, thank you very much. Representative Faust.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is, out of the 10 school districts that we've got listed here, how many of those are currently taking the full 90%?
Mr. Sullivan, I don't know if you know or not. Otherwise, I will call on our staff here.
Okay, I do not know the answer to that.
Okay, we always say Mr. Crow or Mr. Strom and see which one talks. Oh, where is Mr. Crow? I wonder why there's...
Madam Chair, your method is still valid. Mr. Strom, go talk.
I'm as bad as Representative Garofalo, who couldn't tell the other day that we only had one, too. Remember, you were saying Mr. Crow or Mr. Strom, but what was missing? Mr. Strom.
Representative Phelps, the formula essentially reimburses them for their prior year's expenses up to 90% of that amount. So the amount that's submitted to the department is their expenses for that year. All the districts levied at their maximum amount possible for the ICE Arena levy.
I've been on boards where we had a nice arena, and we've got some of these in the $20,000-$30,000 range. I know that it costs a lot more than that to operate a nice arena.
Mr. Strom. Mr. Sullivan, the operating question has been deflected to you.
Our ice arenas, for example, we have two ice arenas in our district, Polar Arena and Tartan Arena. Tartan Arena happens to be a joint powers arena. We work with the City of Maplewood and Oakdale, and we jointly run that, and we share the expenses. Our Polar Arena, we do not levy anything for that because we raise enough money by selling ice and selling tickets so that our operating expenses are not greater than our revenues. So consequently, we do not need the levy for that. Tartan Arena is different. We have debt service on that arena, some other issues, and so we do have some operating expense left over. And so I think it varies from district to district based on how well they do in terms of selling ice and making money, because if they earn more than they spend, they don't have access to this, is my understanding.
That was actually my follow-up question then, is does the levy allow them only to cover their losses, or does it allow them to cover their expenses? Because, like I said, expenses are much higher than these numbers.
Madam Chair, Representative Faust, the language that the bill defines, of the current statute, defines something called net actual costs, which are the difference between the operating costs less any revenue received. So it's essentially the net loss that the district's able to include in the ice arena levy.
Mm-hmm. Representative McFarland.
Yes, Madam Chair. I just wanted to clarify, since I've been involved with the hockey program in White Bear for about 25 years, White Bear School District does not own an ice arena. The county has an arena in White Bear, and the city has one, and I believe we have a joint powers agreement with them to lease use of. So we do not actually own a school ice arena in our district. Just wanted to clarify that.
Thank you. Mr. Strom?
Madam Chair, members, if you look on line 1.7 of the bill, you can see that the current language says that the district is operating and maintaining the ice arena. So that's the standard that needs to be met with.
Rather than actually owning it. Right. No more members on the list. Representative Lilly, I appreciate that you came in with a generic bill. I always like those better than just asking for your own district. And it's nice to have the information on all the districts here, and this is always our dilemma, you know, are we going to do it for one or do it for all? And so I when I first heard about your bill, I thought it was only for North St. Paul, which and I used to represent North St. Paul, Maplewood, Oakdale, and I watch with great angst to see what your district is going through. So my sympathies, and this is, like you said, one small bill. Representative Lilly, any closing comments?
Well, it's interesting that you bring up that you used to represent our district, and I'm telling you, she is one tough act to follow, Madam Chair, and members. She, you know, there's people in West Maplewood that still, you know, speak fairly highly and still think she's representing. So many of the emails that I get from that area have to be, she has to forward them to me and say, you know, that nice to talk to you, by the way, your state rep is. But so she's a very tough act to follow. So hopefully none of you have to follow her. But very impressive.
Thank you. That's nice to hear, Representative Lilly. Okay. But I think most of them have forgotten me long since, and I'm very pleased with you from what I hear. I forgot to ask for public testimony. Is there any public testimony for or against on this bill? Okay, hearing none, I will renew the motion for House Bill 112 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you, Representative Lilly and Mr. Sullivan.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Representative Mullery. Welcome to the committee, Representative Mullery. I will move House File 762 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And I don't know, Representative Mullery, have you ever had a bill before K-12 education finance before?
Madam Chair, I did in my first 2 years here.
I knew it did a long while. So Ms. Representative Mullery said this is a simple bill.
Opposing party took over.
Okay. So always a simple bill we have to examine with fine-tooth comb members.
Madam Chair, I hope that's not a reference to my hair.
No, I wasn't meaning that at all. Representative Mullery, please explain your bill.
Madam Chair, after listening to the last bill on an ice arena, I hope this in the future doesn't become an issue of an ice arena, because it does actually involve something that we received as a gift from the state to give to the, well, I guess it would be, we were given the opportunity to provide an arena for baseball to the rest of the state, and in turn we hope that it without a dome doesn't become an ice arena. But this actually does involve the bill that unfortunately there was a slight part left out in the final bill for the stadium. Under state law, there's an aid called Basic Support Grants that comes through your committee, and it goes to regional library system. And there's a maintenance of effort requirement in there, so that governments, and it's a good idea, so that governments don't get the state aid and then cut back on what they're putting into the library system. The only problem, we don't want to change that. It's just that as part of our opportunity to provide everybody else with paying for a stadium for everyone, in that we did actually get the right to put some money from our sales tax into our library systems for Minneapolis and Hennepin County. And as part of that, and in fact, I talked to Representative Neil Peterson this week, who was part of the major effort to keep that in the bill. Initially, he was opposed to the libraries getting funded from the sales tax, but then he was very strongly supportive of it. And he said that was definitely not to take away money that the state was granting to our library system. It was to be an additional help for the Minneapolis and Hennepin County libraries. And so all this bill does is say that extra money that we get, and it's not necessarily that we get it. It depends on a very convoluted formula as to whether we even get money from that sales tax for the library. But if we do get some, and then the following year, for instance, we didn't get as much, that would not knock us off the maintenance of effort requirement for this aid from the state. And I believe that explains it. Kit Hadley, the head of the Minneapolis system, is here. Do you want to add anything or just answer questions?
Ms. Hadley, welcome to the committee, and if you could please state your name for the tape and tell us if you want to add anything or not.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Kit Hadley. I'm the director of the Minneapolis Public Library. I'd be happy to answer questions. Representative Mullery has described this well.
Thank you very much. I think he has. And members, in case you don't know Ms. Hadley, she is the person that was lauded in the newspaper recently for doing good government reform and doing herself out of a job, as I recall. So that is to be commended, I think.
Thank you, Madam Chair, I think.
But I'm sure people that do that bit of a thing will find another good job, and I'm sure you will. No members on the Representative Garofalo. Nature abhors a vacuum.
What's that?
Nature abhors a vacuum. No questions, but now there is one.
Oh, I want to tell you what I thought. I heard you say.
I don't think I want to hear it either.
It's the first time I've ever been speechless in committee. To the testifier, Representative Ballery, for the members who weren't here, the appropriations under the Hennepin County local option sales tax to the library, can you refresh our recollections as to how much money it is? Because there were two different ways to do it, and to be honest, I don't remember the final version we passed. What are how much money can actually go to the library system, and what are the stipulations that need to be met for that local option sales tax right now?
Representative Mullery.
Madam Chair and Representative Garofalo, I haven't a clue. It's a very convoluted formula, but I think Ms. Hadley could probably explain it briefly.
Ms. Hadley, do you have a clue?
Madam Chair and Representative, the legislation authorized up to $4 million after the payment of debt service. Half of that went to youth services and half to the library, so it's up to $2 million after the payment of debt service.
Madam Chair and Representative Garofalo, the reason that I say it's almost impossible to calculate is because I've talked to the people in finance, and they basically don't know if there's going to be anything over the debt service on that, and that's why I was told a lot of years there won't be anything. That was their view.
Representative Garofalo.
And Madam Chair and the testifier, And again, there were a couple different versions of this going around. It was the end of session, and it was late. So sorry for not remembering this. But what was the mechanism for the inflator and the $4 million? Because Representative Mulray, my understanding is actually that there's going to be quite a bit of money going to the libraries. That was my recollection. And
Representative Mulray.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, I believe Ms. Hadley has the formula.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, the amount up to $4 million between these two uses is increased by up to 1.5% annually. That's the language in Section 473.757.
Okay,
Representative Garofalo.
Okay, so Madam Chair, I must be confusing it with the Senate language then, because my recollection was that there was a implicit price deflator in there that was actually growing at the rate of the Hennepin County sales tax, but I know, like I said, there were different versions of that, so again, I just wanted to clarify that. But thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Mullery, and the testifier.
Any other questions? Seeing none, I will renew the motion for House File 762 to be placed in possible consideration for the K-12 Omnibus Bill. Thank you, Representative Mullery and Ms. Hadley. And members, the meeting's adjourned.